Hey, it's a week 7 NFL review and Monday night preview on the Shots and Tenier NFL podcast from FTN Fantasy. Welcome. It is our show for October 20th, 2025. I am Aaron Schatz. I am that DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. He is Mike Tenier. You know him from his Substack at miketenier.substack.com. We are brought to you by our friends at Underdog Fantasy. If your fantasy team is decimated by injuries like the Washington Commanders and the San Francisco 49ers, two teams going in very different directions, by the way.
Interesting, yeah.
Underdog is a great way to get back in the game. You can make picks using everything you learn on our show and then sweat the games and win cash when your picks come in. New customers play $5 and get up to $100 in bonus funds or entries when they use promo code FTN to sign up. Terms apply, and as always, play responsibly. Don't forget, if you are watching us live, which we do on 11 a.m. on Mondays and Thursdays Eastern Time, you can ask questions and make comments. I had a couple of comments last week about the audio quality, which seems to be better on the YouTube stream of my, this is of my microphone.
Oh.
Seems to be better on the YouTube stream than the podcast itself. If people are having problems with that, please email me or send me a Blue Sky or Twitter message or something. And I'm going to try to figure out how to make that better. But
you gotta get yourself one of these chumpies here that I've got on my little.
I've got one of these instead.
That's good.
I don't know what brand this is, but you know, we've got one.
Might be upgrade time.
Michael Owen Brewer wants to says, I saw online that Michael Penix Jr. has a rather severe home road split. Historically, would that be more coaching or player based? From a statistical perspective, I think it's not real.
What about if it's dome or weather?
Yeah, some of it is dome. Some of it is the dome, yes. But also, in general, once you adjust for domes, most home road splits do not maintain themselves over multiple years. Mm-hmm. Now, I know Ben Roethlisberger always had a very strong home road split. Mm-hmm. But for the most players and most teams, it doesn't, even Denver doesn't come out as a stronger home field advantage than other places if you look over like 10 or 12 years. So I happen to generally be of the belief that home field advantage is always kind of the same and that certain players don't really struggle anymore on the road. So I don't think it's coaching based at all.
Also with Penix, our sample size remains incredibly tiny and incredibly volatile right now.
Sergio says, Mike McDaniel fired when?
Not today. Not today from all the reports.
It's tough because I always feel like firing a coach in the middle of the season, I don't quite know what it gets you.
Right.
Compared to firing him at the end of the season. You're not going on some kind of playoff run.
Right. There's the culture of the locker room, the guys quitting thing, the situation where, like, when players check out, it impacts other players and their development. But I don't know if that's – Miami, if getting Ray McDaniel even helps that, because then you've got a quarterback who's mouthing off. You've got, like turtles all the way down cultural issue there.
Yeah, and I it does feel like the whole organization needs to start over in the offseason.
Right.
New quarterback, new
GM,
head coach, new GM, new everything.
Right.
It's unfortunate because I'm a McDaniel fan. I think he's a great, smart offensive guy. I like his attitude. Like, I like his kind of flippant silliness.
We ain't 25-year-old athletes, man. What works for
yeah, athletes, that's the question. Does he get right? Does he get through to 25-year-old athletes? No, that is absolutely the case. That you're absolutely right.
Now that he survived this, I guess it's the week 12 bye. And to your point about the offensive mind, as soon as he leaves, you know, the 49ers and Packers like tackle each other to bring him in as a
some kind offensive consultant.
Be welcome here in Philly. Be welcome here in Philly in that role.
Camden Cap says it makes firing the head coach keeps you from making the mistake of talking yourself into extending a bad coach with regression to the mean. I think even if the Dolphins regress to the mean a bit over the rest of the season, we know that McDaniel is not going to be there next year.
Right. It would take something really amazing, like Quinn Ewers suddenly turning into Jaden Daniels.
Speaking of which, how about that NFC East? Let's start by talking about the NFC East. The NFC East now has three of the top 10 teams in DVOA, and not in the order that you would expect. The Eagles moved up from 15th to 10th. The Cowboys move up from 17th to 9th.
Wow.
And the Commanders drop from 6th to 8th. Now, here's the thing about the Commanders being so high. They are the most inconsistent team in the league this year. Their three wins are all at 70% DVOA or higher.
Wow.
And their losses are all negative. There aren't any, like, wrong losses. Like, their losses are all losses. They got outplayed. And this was their worst game of the season this week. And obviously, they're racked with injuries. And now Jaden Daniels might be hurt. But it's a little weird. DVOA says they're better than they've looked in their losses because of how good they've been in their wins. But given their injuries, it may not matter.
It is hard looking back and saying which team were they from week to week. Were they the Mariota team? The Mariota team beat the Raiders. Were they the no McLaurin team, which we see most of the way? Obviously, we saw the no McLaurin, no Debo, and no Daniels version last week. But you mentioned at the beginning, talk about a team trending in the right, in the wrong direction. Niners keep gutting out wins in this injury crisis. Commanders, who don't have as bad an injury crisis, honestly, if you line them up,
are no, because the Commanders, for all that is wrong with the Commanders, I think they have not lost their two best defensive players.
Correct. They have not lost their two best defensive players. They had their starting quarterback this week for three quarters and were trailing.
Right, and that they had lost the game by the time Daniels got hurt.
Right. Although McMariota made sure of it with one of his first throws. Yeah.
The Eagles look good. Jalen Hurt, I don't know why they can't get Saquon Barkley going. The offensive line is just having problems this year. I know, you know, Dickerson was hurt for a little bit, but it's still mostly the same guys, and they're not getting the push that they were getting last year at all. But Hurts had his best game of the year. I was amazed at that play at the end when he launched the ball downfield to A.J. Brown on a third down when I thought they were going to run the ball to eat clock.
Right.
Instead of that, instead of going for an easy completion to try to get the first down, they went for a very difficult completion and got the first down and ended the game.
That's the stuff they've done in the past when they felt confident in themselves. They took that kind of kill shot a lot over the last 3 years. And it goes to show you, yeah, Barkley sometimes is getting the ball and running right into a defender. Like, that defender is on him almost immediately. He had a couple of decent runs that got called back for holding penalties and things like that yesterday. But it shouldn't be that difficult. You just put the ball up there for Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown. Whenever you've got single coverage, you're going to get completions. You're going to get enough deep completions to help start to get the rest of the offense on track.
And I was a little amazed that they didn't use Quinyon Mitchell only on Justin Jefferson.
Oh, no.
I saw a couple of Addison passes where Mitchell was on him and gave up passes that Addison caught it. I mean, Addison is a very good number two receiver.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. DeJean was on Jefferson a couple of times, and not just because Jefferson was in the slot. DeJean did do a little bit of outside cornerback play, especially after Adore got hurt. It was like, well, here we go. Who's who? But – yeah, it was mixed up. There were times where there were obviously a bracket on Jefferson too, where you would see Bond drop into coverage to help Jackson or Kaylee or whoever was on him. So Fangio did a variety of things.
I feel like this game, it really backed my priors about Philadelphia's defense,
right?
Which is that they're not as good as last year, and that losing the players that they lost in the offseason was a problem. But that they're better than they were when Carter and Mitchell were not on the field, and that game has an asterisk.
As you might expect, absolutely.
Well, people said to me, when I put something up on the social media about that game getting an asterisk, they were like, well, other teams have missed players. I'm like, no. The asterisk is not an excuse. The asterisk is a reminder.
Right.
That when Quinyon Mitchell and Jalen Carter are not in the lineup, this is a different defense, and you can't use that to predict how they'll be going forward when those two players are healthy.
And that's what you're trying to be. What we're trying to be is predictive. Similarly to the Commanders, where if the Commanders come back, hey, it's Jaden Daniels and Debo and Terry McLaurin, it's like, well, this is probably a different team right now. And they should be treated differently than maybe what we saw on Sunday.
Right. I won't say the words Baltimore Ravens here. I'll just mention them.
No, we will. I think we got them on Thursday, right? We get they're, they've got.
Yeah, we'll get them this week.
Yes.
Camden Cap says, "Have we talked about how real the Colts are?"
I do want to
talk about the Colts. Let's talk about the Colts a little bit. Not how real, because I think at this point we all know this is for real.
Yeah.
But how good it is.
Yeah.
They have a 10% advantage over the rest of the league in offensive DVOA. They are second overall.
They're number one on offense.
They're number one running. Who's number two on offense? Number two on offense is Kansas City.
Oh, well, yeah.
That Rams 3, Detroit 4, Seattle 5, Dallas 6.
Wow, okay.
I have a feeling there's some opponent adjustments going on there with the Cowboys. No, there's not, actually. Yeah, they only come out 6th.
Okay.
But, I mean, those are all good offenses, right? Yes. I mean, Kansas City 2nd is not.
Yes. Right, and the sneaky good Rams.
The Colts had a 93.6% DVOA in this week's game. That is the biggest single game of the year so far.
Good heavens.
The Lions win over the Bears in week 2 is number 2, 52-21. And the Patriots 42-13 over the Panthers, now that the Panthers look like they don't suck,
is
the third biggest game of the year. The odds now give the Colts a 15% chance of winning the Super Bowl. They are now our AFC favorites.
Really?
The Chiefs are at 14% to win the Super Bowl because the Colts get the one seed in 44% of simulations because they have the best record in the conference.
Conference, and they have the AFC schedule as opposed to the much tougher AFC West.
And they look really good. They look much better than Buffalo right now.
It's like watching your favorite movie, watching their offense. Like, you don't have to be a Colts fan. If you're a football fan, you want to see an offense operate. You want to watch the Colts right now. You want to see the ball go into different guys. You like rollouts. You like bootlegs. You like play action. You like misdirection. You like tight ends lined up as fullbacks. You want to watch the Colts right now.
Yeah, boy, I feel like an idiot. FTN has a dynasty league, a staff dynasty league, and I took Colston Loveland over Tyler Warren because I thought in the long term that would be a good that would be a slightly more advantage player, but wow, Warren has been fantastic this year.
Right, and he's being deployed all over the place and doing all different things. And Loveland's he's dropping passes and he's at the mercy of Caleb and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and he's also on a team where there's another tight end.
Well, Cole Kmet is sitting right there.
He'll be the top tight end in a year or two, but he's not right now. But Warren, I mean, even in the long term, I feel like I made a mistake. Warren has just been fantastic.
Yeah, he's their possession receiver, and he's kind of their fullback. It's remarkable.
Shuja says, the Colts play style low-key feels like the Lions. It's the new formula for success, a reclaimed quarterback behind a great line with a running game and weapons.
It's worth pursuing if you're some.
How good do you think the Colts' weapons – I mean, Tyler Warren, we know, is really good. It's interesting because I was thinking about the MVP race. And Daniel Jones, I don't feel like he's got great receivers.
Right.
Michael Pittman's good. Alex Pierce is a nice little deep threat. But it's like, who has better receivers, Matthew Stafford or Daniel Jones?
That's a good question. I think
Stafford does because he's got Puka and he's got Devontae Adams.
The top two goes to Stafford, and then like 3 through 7 probably go to the Colts.
Yeah, but and he has a better tight end, right? Obviously, the Colts have the better tight end, but nobody they don't have the Colts don't have a receiver that make you go, oh, good. The thing Burrow's got Jamar Chase out there, right?
Like, yeah, right. It's like when we had these conversations about Brock Purdy. It's like, well, Brock Purdy, we're not going to put in the MVP conversation because we saw Debo, Kittle, everybody else win with Garoppolo and win with these other quarterbacks in the past. We didn't see these guys win with anybody. We didn't see Pittman and Downs.
I think Jones has to be in the MVP conversation.
Yes.
In that if I were voting right now, he would get one of my 5 votes because the MVP is not the most valuable player in a platonic ideal.
Yes. Right.
It's the most valuable player over that 17-game set of games. Right. Like nobody would put Daniel Jones among the 5 most valuable players in the NFL if you were talking about if you had a game to play next week.
Right.
But if we're talking about the first 7 weeks of this season, right, in the past, he absolutely is.
It's about what happened. It's about the things that occurred, not this, yeah, this conceptual thing where it's like, well, you know, it's Justin Herbert because he's better or whatever. Just pointing out to our listeners right now that Aaron does have a vote. And Daniel Jones is plus 2,200 right now to win MVP. Just throwing that out there.
Meanwhile, your man Herbert, the Chargers dropped to 23rd in DVOA now, despite having a winning record.
Well, and that was largely on the defense. Their defense got boat raced for much of that game. Herbert did have two interceptions. He was playing from behind almost the entire game, and they still have their recurring offensive line problem, which is existential at this point.
The other game I wanted to talk about a little bit was the Chiefs spanking the Raiders. A-Dog, the big dog, says the Raiders were a disaster. It looked like an all-time bad DVOA game, except that the Chiefs are good, so there'll be a opponent adjustment.
Right.
It was not. This is surprising. You may have seen the stat out there. I put out there. Other people put out there. The Raiders ran only 30 plays.
Right.
That is the second lowest total since 1978. The lowest was the expansion Browns in their first game against the Steelers in week one of 1999. They ran 28 plays.
Oh, gosh.
And the third was the Saints in 1980 in a week five loss to the St. Louis Cardinals, which is the worst DVOA game of all time.
Like Archie Manning throwing
40-6 or something. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh.
But the Chiefs only were at 59% DVOA for this game. I would have expected it to be higher. The lack of turnovers was an issue because the fact is I do include turnovers. Even though turnovers are less consistent than success rate, I do account for turnovers. And the fact is the Raiders, I think, only turned the ball over once.
Yeah, but you can't get a turnover when it's three and out.
When you don't have the ball. But yeah, the Chiefs had a 59. Very nice, 59%. That's their best game of the year.
Right.
Right. And I know everybody feels like the Chiefs are a total wagon now. I feel like early in the season, people were too low on the Chiefs. And now I feel like I wouldn't say people are too high on the Chiefs. I feel like people are talking about them as if they're inevitable again when they're just really good.
They're really good. They feel inevitable in a conference where the Colts are the other powerhouse, where we're sitting
and
around
struggling and
we're contemplating.
Weird things happen, right? The best Chiefs year in 2018, they didn't even make it to the Super Bowl. So weird things happen.
Right.
Nothing is inevitable.
Right. It's step by step. You look at it and say, well, are they going to pull past the Broncos and the Chargers and win the AFC West? Most of us are going to say yes.
That is definitely feels like it is the way it is now. Yes.
Right, right. And that didn't feel as clear, let's say, 3 weeks ago.
Let's talk about two games with reverse post-game win expectancy, where the underlying stats suggest that the quote-unquote wrong team won. Broncos over Giants, 5%. The Giants were much more efficient passing the ball than the Broncos in that game.
Well,
Jack Dart was way more efficient passing the ball. But the Broncos had 33 points in the fourth quarter. Unbelievable comeback.
Yes, yes.
Ridiculous with where the win expectancy line went all up and down at the end of the game. Riley Moss, I was not a fan of the DPI call. Riley Moss. I see where, you know, I kind of see it, but I was not a fan of it.
At that moment where it's obvious that they're playing, you know, roulette with just chucking the ball downfield. Every throw is just a throw downfield. It's like they're clearly just aiming for this penalty. You better make sure it's flagrant. This is a time to swallow the whistle for a no call. Don't just give them this gift, especially when there was – I mean, there was a roughing the passer call before that. I don't know how. I didn't get a good look at that. Was that really a good roughing the passer? Or...
I don't remember whether it was.
Right. It was the flukiness was high. Not a fan of the call, but at any rate.
The Giants defense, on the other hand, you cannot allow those last couple passes. You can't let Knicks get the 40 yards or whatever.
Right.
They put them in field goal range with 15 seconds left or whatever the heck they had.
Right. And as bad as Knicks was for most of that game, that's the kind of thing that's like song and story type of stuff in that last drive where he's not only completing those passes, but he's getting up the line, spiking the ball, walking away like with a little poop eating grin on his face while the Giants are still trying to get lined up and everything like that. That was an impressive moment for Knicks.
I think Denver had the win, but if you walked away from that game having only watched that game, you would feel like the Jackson Dart was the better quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, I think we need, like, Jackson Dart has been good.
I refuse to acknowledge it. I'm not going there
he
yet.
He has been good. Maybe that's just the first couple games. And Nick was good, too, at the end of last year. Now Nick looks kind of blah. Although I looked, his numbers are not as bad as I expected. But he looks kind of blah. But Dart looks good.
Dart has balls of steel.
He does. He runs into contact when he runs. Like, he's like, I'm a big man. Here I come. Like,
right. And he gets up.
I'm just a large man. Here we go. Like,
he's got a little Harbaugh in him. He's got a little Harbaugh or Dan Campbell in him. So, and that's going to help him on the journey ahead. Let's put it that way.
The other game with the reverse post-game win expectancy was Packers over Cardinals, 29%. But this one was not a DVOA based. This is because the Cardinals ran 18 more plays.
Okay.
And the Packers had 7 more penalties.
Yeah.
So the system says normally when you run 18 more plays than the other team and you have 7 fewer penalties, you will win.
Packers were a real tough watch. Really for that entire game. They were
Mina Kimes on her podcast last week did the very funny metaphor that the Packers are like the girl from She's All That or any of those like 90s teen comedy, right, where when they take off their glasses, they're suddenly beautiful. And you just spend the whole movie going, will you just take off your glasses already? And I felt like in this game, the Packers just put on worse glasses and a very ugly hat.
They put on.
They were like, we're not only are we not that hot chick, we are gonna just make ourselves as ugly as possible.
They put on Groucho glasses. I have a feeling they have 20/80 vision, though. I think that might be what we're looking for. I don't know if they can wear contacts because they're this thick. I keep hearing about this other Packers team. When were they? Where were they?
I guess they're sixth in DVOA. So they've played well this year. They're 4-1-1, right?
Their defense.
But they play with their food. I'll tell you where we saw the other Packers team. Week 1.
Yeah, Week 1. Okay, so we're talking about Week 1. You of all people talking about Week 1 and how we have to like take it out of the stats after a while.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the Patriots in a moment. The Packers have felt like, Iceman says, the Packers have felt like less than the sum of their parts for the last 2.5 years.
You mean 12 and a half years?
Yeah. Since 2010, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think the Packers are this team. They're sixth.
Yeah.
They're the team that you want to be first. Mm-hmm. And you feel like the talent is there to be first, but they're not. But they're also not 15th. They're just kind of like sixth.
Right. They can straighten things out, and they need to show they can straighten things out. But I still haven't seen in the last 2 years, certainly, except for Week 1, the straightened out version of it. But I'm putting together a thing, and I'm like, why each team sucks. You know, all the 5-2 teams that suck, like the Broncos, the Eagles, the Packers, 4-1-1, whatever. And, you know, the Packers are 2-4 against the spread, and Matthew Golden's in my dynasty league. And therefore, they suck.
Yeah. here's the DVOA top 12. Let's count it. Number 12, Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, we'll see tonight.
Playing tonight. Number 11, dropping a couple of spots, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Reality setting in. They're going to hover back into their little place in the middle-ish.
Then 10-9-8, Philly, Dallas, Washington.
Oh, my gosh.
Even though Philly and Dallas moving up. And Washington moving down,
and all eyes on Daniels' injury.
7, another team playing tonight, the Houston Texans.
Yeah,
because of that Baltimore game, it's just that Baltimore game is just huge when you've only played 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6, Green Bay.
Yeah, okay.
Number 5, Kansas City.
And moving upward.
Number 4, the Los Angeles Rams.
Quietly
dominated Jacksonville, just whacked the living hell out of them.
Whacked the living hell out of them, pulled away from the Ravens, had a little trouble there. Wins on the road, wins in bad weather, wins in Europe. Quietly, really, 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 really good.
Number 3, the Detroit Lions.
Playing tonight.
Number two, the Indianapolis Colts.
And number one, ladies and gentlemen, your
Seattle Seahawks. Also, again, playing tonight. If they don't, you know, if they have a very close win tonight or lose, then Indianapolis will move into the number one spot.
A lot going on tonight.
And also, as a fan, I just want to point out that the Patriots, despite playing Middle Tennessee State, would be eighth if we took out the first 2 weeks.
Okay.
The first 2 weeks, they had that wacky loss to the Raiders that in retrospect looks crazy. Mm-hmm. And then a very narrow win over Miami. And yeah. Since then, they've been a top 10 team based almost entirely on the quarterback.
On Drake May and the passing game.
They still can't run, and the defense is bad. The defense is bad. Like, I feel like the local press doesn't understand that the defense is not good.
I can only imagine what the mentality of the local press is, right?
I think now. Some of it is because of who they've played, right? The defense looks better than it is because of who they've played, but the defense is not good. Like, it's not. Like, one really good corner and a couple of reasonable defensive tackles, and it's just not – the local press is not as crazy going on some kind of winning, like – parading around like they're the smartest people in the world, like you might think. They're I think people don't feel like the Brady days are back, but there's definitely a feeling of, and I posted something about this yesterday, of wow, are we lucky that we got another one of these guys.
Right.
Like, think about a franchise like Chicago has been waiting since 1940 for a franchise quarterback.
Right.
And we now have a second one who there's a good chance that by the end of the year, we'll be saying is one of the top five or six quarterbacks in the game. Like, that's incredibly lucky.
Waiting and seeing.
Waiting and seeing.
What? Impressed. Absolutely impressed. Big win over Middle Tennessee State.
Yeah, well, that's the rest of their schedule. Again, they have one of the easiest schedules of all.
In the world, yeah. So this will continue, and we will continue to see.
This will continue. They still haven't played the Jets.
They still have not played the Jets.
Two games against the Jets.
The Jets, who are unclear who their starting quarterback is right now. Aaron Glenn. Yeah.
I don't know if going to Tyrod Taylor. I mean, again, like, what does it get them? It doesn't get them anything unless they feel like that will help them to win three or four games instead of one and build culture.
He was bad.
Everything is about, at this point, I think everything for the Jets is about how to build a culture that is not as bad as their record.
Right. To stop this backwards spiral where every week seems worse and more embarrassing and more distressing.
Yes. Let's talk about Monday Night Football. 5-1 Buccaneers at the 4-2 Lions at 7 p.m. That is a good game.
That is a good game. All eyes are on the injury report, where it appears that Amika Mbuka and Mike Evans may be back for this game.
That's a surprise. I thought Egbuka was going to be out for a couple of weeks. If he plays tonight, that is really nice for them.
It is a surprise. They're questionable as of 11:28 a.m. I don't have today's injury information. A lot of injuries in the Lions secondary. Kirby Joseph was ruled out. He's out.
Oh, that's not good.
And I say all this, and of course they have all these other injuries scattered around the defense, and yet I see a 6-point line in favor of the Lions right now.
Yeah, Aleem McNeil is back. That's good for their defense.
That's a big one.
It's a strong Lions run defense against a Bucs team that struggles to run.
Right, no Bucky Irving. He's out.
It's a strong Lions passing game against the Bucs pass defense, which is 20th in DVOA and 22nd against middle passes, which you always have to check when you play the Lions.
Good point.
Baker Mayfield against man covers this year, -20% DVOA.
Okay.
But who's Although covering? The Lions are playing less man coverage than they usually do.
Right. And
because of those injuries in their secondary.
And they're running out of guys back there.
So there's a lot of interesting things in this game. More interesting than a line of -6, although I guess I do like the Lions -6 at home.
I'm waiting on the injury report. If I get any sense that we're a go with Evans and Mbuka, I'm taking it. Of course, by then, it'll probably not be -6.
The Lions are also 31st in ESPN's pass rush win rate. Although it's funny, we were all like, why don't they bring Za'Darius Smith back? And now I guess we know why they don't bring Za'Darius Smith back, because Za'Darius Smith didn't really have the want.
Didn't feel like it anymore.
Listen, he has every right to. Of course. I mean, he gave up a chance to win a Super Bowl by leaving the Eagles, right? The Eagles are definitely contenders, and Za'Darius gave up a shot at it, so.
Don't risk your health if you're not into it. Don't do it for the money or the obligation, certainly.
And then the old people on the East Coast go to sleep special. The 2-3 Texans at the 4-2 Seahawks, which is, it's kind of nice for people who live on the West Coast to do a 10 p.m. Eastern game. It sucks for those of us on the East Coast, but it's kind of nice. For people on the West Coast, it would be even more exciting if their baseball team wasn't playing a game set at the same time.
That's right. I was on Vancouver radio today, this morning, and they could not give a crap. They could not give a crap.
Oh, and our football team number one in DVOA? Yeah, don't care. First World Series we've ever been to. Come on. Right. I'm rooting. Nothing against the Blue Jays. I'm rooting for the Mariners, man. The Blue Jays haven't been there in 30 years, but they've at least have been there.
A lot of excitement in Canada right now, because a lot of Canadians root for Seattle. So
yes, it's interesting. Yeah, Canada's sort of west-east split between Mariners fans and Blue Jays fans. Red Matt points out that the 10 p.m. game is an absolute killer for people in Europe. You wake up at 5 a.m., I guess.
I mean, I often just tape these games and wake up at about 5:45 in the morning to watch them.
Seattle is only 26th rushing, but Houston is only 16th on run defense. They're a much better defense against the pass than they are against the run.
Yeah, they want you in third and long where they could destroy you. So you got to hammer at the running game.
Texans are also number one in DVOA against deep passes, which is interesting because a lot of times these teams with a great pass rush will be kind of weak against deep passes on an efficiency level. Mm-hmm. Because when you are able to stand up straight and get a deep pass off, they're not that strong against them.
Right. Your 54 sacks are not in the deep pass data.
But Houston is number one against deep passes so far this year. So interesting, because obviously they like to go deep.
Yeah. We got Witherspoon questionable for this game, and we have Julian Love questionable for this game. So there's a couple of injuries to keep an eye out for on the Seattle defensive side of the ball. Texans, from what I believe, coming off a bye, are pretty healthy. What? Something. Aaron, we're having a sound issue. And it is a weird sound issue. Folks, I don't know if you're hearing this live, but it sounded like Alvin and the Chipmunks. Try again. Nope, I'm getting nothing. I'm getting a squeaky noise. It's like you're fast-forwarding.
That's weird. Okay, that was really strange. All right, microphone. Maybe it's time for a new microphone. I said something earlier. Maybe
yours is time traveling now. I think it's definitely time for a new microphone.
Yeah, Seattle minus three.
Seattle
minus three at home and over 41.
I like it. 41's a nice low over.
That Seattle offense has been really good this year. I know the Houston defense is really good, but that Seattle offense has been really, really good this year.
And the Texans' offensive line has risen to mediocrity below averageness, which is a big upgrade, which gives CJ Stroud more of a chance to score.
So much about the Houston is watching the Houston games. So much about watching Houston games is their offensive line good enough to be average?
To do anything, right? And once they get close to average, it's a whole different team. They look like a deep playoff run team.
All right, that does it for the Monday show, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for watching on YouTube. Thank you for leaving comments. And we will be back Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern, hopefully with a working microphone. And we'll do this again and preview week 8 in the NFL. Tell your friends about the show. Like and review it. Say nice things. We'll talk to you on Thursday. So long, everybody.